And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, written by Virginia Mazur, is based on the life and poetry of the winner of last year's Nobel Prize for Literature, Nellie Zaks. Ms. Zaks shared this honor with the Israeli writer Shmuel Yosef Agnon. Guest commentator today is Dr. Vera Lachman, professor of classics at Brooklyn College. Here now is Nellie Zaks, A Sheaf of Lightning.
After Auschwitz, there can be no more poetry in Germany.
These are the words of Professor Theodor Adorno, philosopher and literary critic at the University of Frankfurt, shortly after the fall of Hitler. He was speaking out of the nightmare that was Germany of that day, when the whole country was being revealed to the world as one vast tomb of Gothic horror. But Adorno was to be proved wrong, and it would be a delicate wisp of a woman who would do it. A woman as fragile as smoke, but speaking with a tongue of flame.
We orphans, we lament to the world. Our branch has been cut down and thrown into the fire. Kindling was made of our protectors. We orphans lie stretched out on the fields of loneliness. We orphans, we lament to the world. At night our parents play hide and seek. From behind the black folds of night their faces gaze at us. Their mouths speak. Kindling we were in the woodcutter's hand, but our eyes have become angel eyes and regard you. Through the black folds of night they penetrate. We orphans, we lament to the world. Stones have become our playthings. Stones have faces, father and mother faces. They wilt not like flowers, nor bite like beasts, and burn not like tinder when tossed into the oven. We orphans, we lament to the world. World, why have you taken our soft mothers from us and the fathers who say, my child, you are like me. We orphans are like no one in this world anymore. Oh, world, we accuse you.
It was words like those from the poem Chorus of the Orphans that would cause Professor Adorno to retract his statement that after Auschwitz it would be impossible to create a poem.
Nellie Zaks has proved me wrong.
But who is Nellie Zaks? Until October 20th of last year, Nellie Zaks was virtually unknown in America. On that day in her apartment in the city of Stockholm, amidst a bower of roses, she sat smiling and offering sherry to all who dropped in to congratulate her. It had been announced earlier in the day that she and the Israeli writer Agnon had been chosen to share jointly the Nobel Prize for Literature. Someone mentioned that they had been acclaimed as two outstanding Jewish authors who represent Israel's message to our time. She looked thoughtful. Her smile faded a little.
I had hoped my work would be more universal. Agnon speaks for the state of Israel. I represent the tragedy of the Jewish people.
A few weeks later, on December 10th, the anniversary of the death of Alfred Nobel, incidentally, her 75th birthday, Nellie Zaks would attend the Nobel Prize award ceremony in Stockholm. Looking shy, almost waif-like against the glittering backdrop, she would hear her work of more than 50 years summed up for the world.
Nellie Zaks, like so many other German Jewish writers, had to suffer the fate of exile. Through Swedish intervention, she was saved from persecution and brought to this country. Driven by the storm, she has since then worked in peace as a refugee here on Swedish soil, attaining the maturity and authority that are now confirmed by the Nobel Prize. With moving intensity of feeling, she has given voice to the Jewish race's worldwide tragedy, which she has expressed in lyrical laments of a painful beauty and in dramatic legends, whose symbolic language combines modernistic daring of inspiration with echoes of ancient biblical poetry. She has identified herself utterly with the faith and the ritual mysticism of her people in order to create out of them a world of imagery which does not shun the terrible truth, that of the extermination camps and the corpse factories, but at the same time rises above all the hatred of the persecutors, merely revealing a genuine horror at man's debasement. Nelly Sachs' writing has become the most intense artistic expression of the Jewish spirit's reaction to suffering in our time. And from that viewpoint, too, can be said to fulfill the humane purpose underlying Alfred Nobel's will.
And what was the poet herself thinking that night, amidst all the pomp and circumstance of the occasion? Was she remembering the terrible years in Nazi Germany, when one by one members of her family vanished, when she herself was debased, her work reviled? No. She thought instead of her father. How each December 10th, in his native city of Berlin, he used to say, "Tonight in Stockholm, they are giving out the Nobel Prize awards." Had Nellie's father some prophetic insight that one day his own daughter might be seated on the dais in the festival hall, honored by princes, toasted by the king?
Miss Nellie Sachs, in offering you the congratulations of the Swedish Academy, I ask you now to receive this year's Nobel Prize for Literature from the hands of His Majesty the King.
In the United States, at the time of the Nobel Prize award last December, only a handful of scholars had ever heard of Nellie Sachs. One of them is here today. She is Dr. Vera Lachman, professor of classics at Brooklyn College. Dr. Lachman, I know that you are an ardent admirer of the poetry of Nellie Sachs. Isn't it true that you also know the poet herself?
Oh, yes. I know her very well. I met her about 30 years ago in Germany, during the Nazi years. Two of her friends introduced me to Liechen, as they called her, with affection. Thus began a warm personal relationship based upon devotion to poetry. There were unforgettable afternoons with her and her tiny mother at an old-fashioned tea table with pansies in a glass bowl and a room full of quaint heirlooms. Nellie Sachs seemed ageless. I hardly realized how much she was my senior. She was graceful, frail, with dark curls and the large eyes of shy animals. Her pale face often lit up with a smile, in which there was much of sadness. She had been writing since she was a schoolgirl, and her poetry at that time made me think of the childlike romantic mysticism of Brentano. It had a fairy tale quality. I remember some sensitive verses about Balaam's she-ass, others about a star's reflection in a well. And there was a puppet play about a sick princess who was healed by a sprig of fresh parsley.
And yet this was during the Nazi years, wasn't it?
The terror was beginning, yes. But not yet in full force. But you have to understand that at first it did not seem to touch or not her work in any case. Her father had been a prosperous merchant, also an amateur musician. She was an only child, frail, as sheltered as a flower. She studied music dancing. She even thought of becoming a dancer. But she never continued her formal education beyond high school. Very early, she began to write her delicate rhymes, and they brought her to the attention of people like Stefan Zweig. But she remained essentially a very private person. Her father had died in 1930, and her mother was an invalid. Nellie hardly ever left her side. The world seemed to stop at her door.
But in the end, the Holocaust broke in upon her, too.
No one was spared. Her friends, her relatives, vanished one by one. Her apartment was seized, and she and her mother went to live in a furnished room. We all knew that arrest and deportation would come next. Then one of the two friends through whom I had met her determined to save Nellie. The friend's name was Gudrun Harlan. She journeyed to Sweden, not knowing the language, not knowing any person there. But once there, she sought out the aged Nobel Prize winner, Selma Lagerlöf. She knew that Nellie admired her and had corresponded with her in the past. But Lagerlöf was an old woman now, and she hardly belonged to the world anymore. She remembered Nellie, however, and when Gudrun Harlan showed her Nellie's last poems, she wrote on a slip of paper in German, "Hätte es selbst nicht besser tun können," meaning I couldn't have done it better myself. This precious note served as a kind of passport. When it was shown to Prince Eugene, who was a generous supporter of the arts, he began to arrange for Nellie and her mother to emigrate to Sweden.
When did you last see Nellie's ox, Dr. Lockman?
In November 1939. It was just before I left Germany myself. Her situation was acute. The papers had not come from Sweden, and we knew that any day she and her mother might be seized by the Gestapo. I went directly to Sweden from Germany and looked into matters for her. I found that a document had been misplaced in the files. Also, that additional money for an affidavit was lacking. The paper finally turned up under letter T instead of S, and a wealthy American relative of mine advanced the money that was needed. So that not long after I arrived in this country, the news reached me that Nellie Sachs and her mother were safe in Stockholm.
So, in the end, you too played some part in getting Nellie's ox out of Germany.
Well, I'd like to think I had some small share in her survival, and that perhaps because of it, too, she lived to write the poetry that will continue as a part of our literary heritage.
Yes. What about her poetry? Did she go on writing during this period of flight and upheaval?
One cannot imagine Nellie's ox not writing. She is her poetry. As she put it once, writing a poem is like drawing a breath. Writing is my mute outcry. I only wrote to save myself. I am convinced that nothing could have stemmed that flow. But now there was a complete change from her earlier imagist neo-romantic style. In 1965, at 73, she put into words in a letter the great and painful rebirth of her art.
All is like a dream. When I wrote here in a few nights, after the flight from Germany and after a dreadful experience, the poems from the habitations of death and the play Eli, a new language burst upon me. Gone everything I had tried till then, as in a glowing, melting furnace. And thus, from one to the next, and on, I was severed with visions such as I had never known.
O night of the weeping children, O the night of the children branded for death, sleep may not enter here. Terrible nursemaids have usurped the place of mothers. have tautened their tendons with the false death, sew it on to the walls and into the beams. Everywhere it is hatched in the nests of horror. Instead of mother's milk, panic suckles those little ones. Yesterday, mother still drew sleep toward them like a white moon. There was the doll with cheeks deruged by kisses in one arm, the stuffed pet already brought to life by love in the other. Now blows the wind of dying, blows the shifts over the hair that no one will comb again. Peoples of the earth, you who swathe yourselves with the force of the unknown constellations as with rolls of thread, you who sow and sever what is sown, you who enter the tangle of tongues as into beehives to sting the sweetness and be stung. Peoples of the earth, do not destroy the universe of words. Let not the knife of hatred lacerate the sound born together with the first breath. Peoples of the earth, oh, that no one mean death when he says life, and not blood when he speaks cradle. Peoples of the earth, leave the words at their source, for it is they that can nudge the horizons into the true heaven, and that, with night gaping like a mask behind their averted side, help give birth to the stars. Ear of mankind, occupied with small sounds, would you hear? If the prophets, moving in with the storm pinions of eternity, if they broke open your acoustic duct with words, which of you wants to make war against a mystery? Who wants to invent the star death? If the prophets stood up in the night of mankind, like lovers who seek the heart of the beloved. Night of mankind, would you have a heart to offer?
Nerizaks was now 50 years old. She was alone in a strange country with an aged mother. She could not speak the language and she had no money. But under those circumstances, her art, the art that would bring her world renown, was born.
How did she survive in those years? Financially, I mean.
Well, people were kind. Also, she lived very modestly. But she was proud. Soon she had mastered the Swedish language well enough to get work from publishers, making translations from Swedish into German. Translating and tending her mother, that was her daytime life. The evenings belonged to her alone. In the long darkness of the northern nights, she wrote. She lit up the darkness. She illuminated the void. This is how she described her inspiration. A sheaf of lightning. A sheaf of lightning on an acre of paper.
Tell me, Dr. Lachman, did Nelly Sachs's work gain immediate acceptance in Sweden?
No, she was writing in German, you understand. This was all she had left from the past, her mother tongue. Also, she seems for a time to have chosen obscurity. Her experience under the Nazis had been so shattering. And this was followed by the death of her beloved mother, then by a long illness of her own, so that she wrote in a letter,
I had never really planned to publish again. I wanted to remain in loneliness. But the young people would not let me alone.
What young people is she referring to?
At first, it was the young Swedish writers whose work she had translated. You see, there was no communication with Germany in those days. Life there was simply a struggle for survival. There was no art, no publishing. Then, in 1950, some of her Swedish friends had printed 200 copies of her verse play, Eli. A copy found its way into West Germany, and it was read over the radio. It cut across boundaries. Among those whom the message inflamed was the poet Hans Magnus Enzensberger and his group. young Germans began coming to Stockholm to seek her out, to sit at her feet.
The young people, the young poets, they say, you are speaking our language. I receive marvelous letters. They all hold me in their arms, all the dear people. It is like a dream. I do not know how I shall ever be able to earn this. This youth, that they want me.
Doesn't it seem a paradox, Dr. Lockman, that this woman, this poet, Nellie Zocks, a Jew who has suffered so much at the hands of the German people, should in turn become an instrument of healing, of reconciliation?
This is her genius, I believe, that she could be a witness to the indescribable sufferings of her people and yet translate this suffering into universal language. No, more than universal, into cosmic language. Man, she wrote about her play Night Watch, will always become guilty. Wherefore? Therefore. This is his tragedy on earth.
Did Miss Zocks ever return to Germany?
In 1960, 20 years after her exodus, that year she was awarded the Droste-Hülshoff Prize, bearing the name of the greatest German poetess of the 19th century, and she went in person to receive it. Next year, the Nellie Zocks Prize was established in her honor in the city of Dortmund. Her books were now being published in Germany, and she had a large following. In 1965, the German book publishers awarded her their Peace Prize, and she journeyed to Frankfurt to receive it. This last event is especially significant, I think. The German press felt so too, for it said,
Miss Zocks will be receiving the Peace Prize in a city that is not only the birthplace of Goethe, but is also the place of the Auschwitz trials. Only a few yards will be separating her, as they did 25 years ago, from the executioners to whom she was to have been delivered. Her volumes of lyric are dominated by one main theme, Israel. Not today's state bearing that name, but the people of the Bible, a God-chosen, tried and afflicted people, not a militant people, but one that has known suffering and sacrifice, mockery, persecution, destruction. To the millions of the nameless and voiceless, who are generally recalled only in the form of merciless seven-figure numbers, Nellie Zocks has given mouth and voice.
When she received the German Book Publishers Prize at Frankfurt, however, Nellie spoke not as much of the past as of the future. She addressed herself particularly to the young Germans in the audience.
In spite of all the horrors of the past, I believe in you. Together, full of grief, let us remember the victims, and then let us walk together into the future to seek again and again a new beginning, maybe far away, yet ever present. Let us try to find the good dream that wants to be realized in our hearts.
On December 10th of last year, Nellie Zocks was to receive the final prize, the highest honor that can be given to a man or woman in his lifetime. Adopted city of Stockholm, the great hall where the awards will take place is thronged with dignitaries. All eyes are fixed upon the dais, banked with flowers and carpeted with red velvet. It is also haunted by the ghosts of those who have gone before, Rudyard Kipling, Selma Lagerlöf, Rabindranath Tagore, Romare Rolland, Anatole France, William Butler Yeats, Thomas Mann, Sinclair Lewis, John Galsworthy, Eugene O'Neill, Pearl Buck, Hermann Hesse, T.S. Eliot, William Faulkner, Albert Camus, John Steinbeck. Hardly visible from the audience is a tiny woman looking neither young nor old, but ageless. Cameras click, flash bulbs explode. She shrinks for a moment from the glare. Then she sits up straight and tall again, smiling.
Miss Nelly-Sachs, you have lived for a long time in our country. First as an obscure stranger and then as an honored guest. Today, the Swedish Academy wishes to honor your outstanding lyrical and dramatic writing, which interprets Israel's destiny with touching strength. In offering you the congratulations of the Swedish Academy, I ask you now to receive this year's Nobel Prize from the hands of His Majesty the King.
This is the voice of Nelly Zotz herself, reading the poem she read that day at the ceremony.
In der Flucht, welch großer Empfang unterwegs. Eingehüllt in der Windetuch, Füße im Gebet des Sandes, der niemals Amen sagen kann, denn er muss von der Flosse in den Flügel und weiter. Der kranke Schmetterling weiß bald wieder vom Meer. Dieser Stein mit der Inschrift der Fliege hat sich mir in die Hand gegeben. Anstelle von Heimat halte ich die Verwandlungen der Welt.
Our Eternal Light program today, Nelly Zachs, A Sheaf of Lightning, was written by Virginia Mazur and is the first in a new series honoring Nelly Zachs, winner of the 1966 Nobel Prize for Literature. Miss Zachs' poems were read by Marion Seldes. Others in the cast today were Theo Getz, Mildred Clinton, Paul McGrath, and the narrator, Norman Rose. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Dr. Vera Lachman was our guest. She is professor of classics at Brooklyn College. We invite you to join us next week when, adapted by Virginia Mazur, The Eternal Light will present scenes from Nelly Zach's dramatic poem, Eli, a Mystery Play. This is the NBC Radio Network.